Oh, hi, and welcome back to Dome and Bedlam, the official Lookout Landing podcast. As always, my name is Nathan Bishop. I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing. I'm joined by a freshly 25 years of age David Skiba somewhere on the eastern palatial shores of Lake Washington. Is that where you are?
Yeah, I'm around there.
You're in that area. Are you near a golf course?
Really close to a golf course.
Nice. David, happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you very much.
How does it feel to be 25?
It feels a little bit sadder than yesterday.
Yeah, get used to that. I don't even remember 25. It was so long ago. We are also really, really excited today. We don't have Scott, which is fine.
We're really excited about
that. That's about all I have. But also, we have an upgrade. We upgraded. This is like Pokemon Go. We pushed the Evolve button. We got enough Scott Weber candy that we pushed the Evolve button. And lo and behold, we have Aaron Goldsmith, play-by-play announcer for the Mariners. Aaron, how are you?
I am so much better than Scott.
I totally agree. It's like we've evolved twice.
Yeah, let me tell you, we're already off to a better start than you would have been otherwise. Skiba, congrats on the birthday, man. I know you
did
a lot
today.
Thank you, man. Judging by your social media feed, you've basically been drinking and drywalling for the last month or so. So
I'm sure you've been an incredible month.
Yeah, so you've really been leading up to this big day, so I'm very
Aaron,
happy.
Are you aware right now of where Scott Weber is, though?
Ooh, that's
because you might be a little jealous.
I'm not aware.
This circles back to the last time we had you on, which was in spring training. Scott is actually at Comic-Con, which almost certainly...
Are you kidding
yes.
me?
So he is almost certainly surrounded by the people that...
People who love anime?
Yes.
I mean, he's like an adult, right? I mean, Scott, I've met Scott. I mean,
he's a solid 32.
Perfectly.
Yeah, exactly.
Age is just a number, though, and Scott's embraced that.
Comic-Con, man.
I don't even know where Comic-Con is. David, do you know where that is?
San Diego this year.
Oh.
I think it changes.
That's not a terrible place to be if you're going to go to Comic-Con.
I mean, I'd go to San Diego.
Sure. I love San Diego. Is that a good road trip, Aaron?
San Diego is a very nice road trip. But yeah, the idea of Scott at Comic-Con makes me feel a lot better about sitting in my hotel room in Canada alone crushing a poutine. So,
wait, you did room service poutine?
You ready for this? 2 years ago, we come into Toronto, and we land here at just whatever, well after midnight, okay? And we must have flown in from someplace on the West Coast. I am starving. Like, I cannot sleep until I eat. It's one of those things.
Sure.
And so, get in the hotel room, find out, oh, there's a Mickey D's, like, a mile away. A mile away at 12:30 in the morning in Toronto? Sounds like a fun time.
Heck yeah.
So I hump it over to this McDonald's, and it's just me and just a ton of druggies in Toronto. And I, for as much of a food lover as I am, as we've all talked about, I had been sheltered from the poutine my whole life.
What?
I had no idea. And I walk into McDonald's and I see this big sign for poutine and I see this picture of whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, all right, man. Like, I'm here, right? I got per diem. I'm a big leaguer. Let's get
Rick gave you your per diem.
And so as a backup plan, I'm like, I'm going to get a burger with a regular order of American fries.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to order poutine on the side.
Okay.
Now, wow. For those of you in the States who haven't had the privilege or the pleasure of ordering a poutine from McDonald's in Toronto, it comes in the device that the Big Mac comes in, right? The cardboard clamshell, okay?
The face device.
Just like, yes. They just push a button and gloop out all of this poutine into that clamshell?
Yeah, so I get my tray, I sit down with a bunch of people with metal spoons, right? And I open this thing up, and I'm like, I'm going to throw up.
Yeah.
And I threw it immediately in the trash. It was the most wasteful thing. I was just like, I'm not even going to try it.
That's the right decision.
Like, I'm going to throw up.
This, like, clear, brown, questionable gravy that was on it. And these just like steaming, melting white cheese curds. I'm like, this is just the most repulsive thing I've ever ordered, ever, ever, ever. And then I walk back to one in the morning to my hotel. Welcome to the big leagues, guys. That's what it's about.
Nice. That is glamorous as hell.
Yeah. No, it's nice. That's my room service poutine at McDonald's in Toronto a couple years ago.
So you are eating poutine now, so it came around for you.
No, but I did have dinner at, I'm telling you guys, maybe, it's tough. This is tough. This is a hard thing to say. Maybe the best restaurant in the major leagues.
Don't say it. No. No way.
Does it offend you that it's not in our country?
It does.
Not me. No.
Okay, there's a restaurant in Toronto called Soto Soto. And it's spelled differently than our Soto.
Okay.
It's S-O-T-T-O, copy and paste.
Okay.
And it's an Italian place that is, it is like, I ate by myself because we're in Canada. There's no way to text people. And I don't want to be that creep knocking on, like, Crimmins' door to be like, hey, what's up, bud? Let's go get some Italian. And so, walk down the street. That's, yeah, exactly. And Blowers would open the door and just, like, kick me right between the legs. And then put his flippers back on and, and order room service. And, like, this place is so good that I was doing, like, the moaning, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, the, what's that?
By yourself. Doing?
By myself. And, like, my first course was done, and the bartender was, she was like, did you like it? And I was like, it was exceptional. She's like, oh, yeah, because I heard you making some noises. And I was like, yeah, no, that's good. I'm by myself in Canada making noises at an Italian restaurant. So it's a great, it's just off the charts. So but I won't take up all the time talking about Soto Soto.
Is it better than a place in Minnesota with a prominent painting of a well-endowed bull?
Well, the artwork is definitely better in Minneapolis.
Okay.
I don't think there's any question about that. Soto Soto, like, let's put it this way. This is the third time. I missed it 1 year. This is the third time in 4 years coming to Toronto that I've eaten there. And every time I walk out going, that might be one of the best meals I've ever had in my entire life.
Wow.
What's the dish, or is it different every time?
So I've tried. So the one thing that I get every time, they have an antipasto platter, which Ooh. I'm looking at a picture of it on my phone as we speak. And I feel like... I feel like I'm kind of hoarding this right now. I'll just tweet it to all you guys, and you
perfect.
Can, that would be great. Thank you.
Just put in your foodborne porn pank like I do. I got a half order of the pasta carbonara. It had been a long time since I'd had a really good carbonara.
Okay.
And then I had a swordfish steak as well.
Wow.
And then I finished it off with an affogato.
Wow.
It would, dude, I'm telling you, man. Like
that is a meal.
I did hit the treadmill earlier today in preparation for this. I also did not eat breakfast because the time zone changed. I had a little bit of a sleep in here.
Yep,
sure.
So I prepared my whole day around Soto Soto.
What was the prep like on that steak?
You know, I talked to the bartender about this because she asked me, have you ever had any of our whole grilled fish before? And I was like, as a matter of fact, yes, I have. And it was incredible. And she said, you know, all we do is olive oil, salt, and pepper. And I'm like, yeah, like that's what you should do
right,
if you
yeah.
have good fish.
Absolutely.
Right? And that's all my swordfish was. Now, they did have like some foam on the side, which Ooh. I dabbed with the bare fork. I don't know what it was. I didn't need it. It looked pretty. But it was just the most simply, beautifully grilled piece of swordfish. It was just delightful.
Huh. In Toronto, of all places, too.
In Toronto, of all places. Yeah, yeah. No, it's a gorgeous restaurant. In fact, the old location burned down on Christmas Day.
Ooh.
Like Christmas night, actually, like in 2014, I want to say. So this is a new location for any of you who are going to be coming up to Toronto. It's just down the street from the Team Hotel. It's a beautiful restaurant. The food is exquisite. It's a tough place to get into. It's a lot of celebrities that go there, which, I mean...
Like you.
Makes sense, right?
Guys? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're there.
Explains how a foreigner like myself would get in so easily.
Yeah. You know Mike Flowers. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. It's like just pictures of Blow on the wall.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Of course. I can see it.
I can tell that Blow loves the word antipasto.
You know, Blow is such a caveman, dude. I mean, really. I love Blow to death. He and I... Like, I have more fun talking with Blow on the plane, in the booth, just around, you know, well before the game, at dinner, than anybody. Blow has a tremendous sense of humor. He's got 4 kids, 3 boys. They're all relatively young, college to junior year in high school. So he's kind of surrounded by...
Oh, Blow's in that time of his life.
Yeah, he's surrounded by our intellect a lot.
Yeah.
So he relates pretty well.
David.
And...
Excuse
me. Dude, I'm telling you, man, like he pervs on all the movies that I watch on the plane because he sits like on the other side of the road and like one row behind me. And like whenever I've got like Step Brothers or like I watched like This Is 40 on our last flight. I mean, Blow's just watching all of it. And I'm telling you what, man, he can recite half the lines in all those movies.
Wow. So good memory. So
he and I just die laughing at stuff all the time. But a lover of fine food, Blow is not. he's a very simple man, and I respect
that
about him.
Does he own a smartphone? And if he does, how many times does he ask you for help with it?
Okay, that is an incredibly astute question, and I feel like you've been perving on us now that you even thought to ask that.
I really love the shirt you're wearing today, by the way.
Yeah, it's
my
webcam's up. So two years ago, I'm not kidding you, he had the Motorola Flip, or like the one where like with two thumbs you like slide the whole phone.
Ooh, oh sure, the Razor deck came out.
It's not the Razor, but it like, yeah, like index fingers on the back, thumbs on the corners. Yeah. It looks like it should be bedazzled. Okay. Uh-huh. It was like the only phone of its kind left. It always worked for Mike. And then one day he comes in the booth, hand in his pocket. And I'm like, what? Pulls out an iPhone.
Oh,
are you kidding? Blow. I was steamed, man. I let him know about it too. Like the whole family like upgraded. He got a free phone, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, you're going to have no idea how to work this. Like, zero idea.
It's more work for you now.
Yeah, because before all this happened, he had, like, whatever the PC version of an iPad is that, like, he would borrow from one of his kids on road trips. And I'm not kidding you, dude. It'd be commercial break, final game of the homestand of the road trip. Like, the flight is 2 hours away, and he's coming to the booth, throwing this thing on my scorebook, and he's like, I need this downloaded. I need this movie downloaded. I'm like, man, like we've been over this like 100 times, you know? And like, I don't know how to use your PC movie renting store. Like, I don't even know what this is. And then we get on the plane and then doesn't download all the way. It was.
And he's mad at you.
And he gets mad at me.
It's your fault, clearly.
Yeah. So like, he will not use Apple or Google Maps on his phone because he thinks people are tracking him. I'm like, well, listen, man, you were a good player, but.
Well, also he's on TV. Like how under the radar does he?
Yeah, it's like,
he's at like, Safeco Field.
Like people basically have like a 50-mile radius idea of where you are for 6 months out of the year. So like, I'm not kidding you. We were in Houston. Oh, it's on July 4th. We're in Houston, July 4th. And we have a night off in Houston because it's a day game on July 4th. And like downtown Houston, it's like The Walking Dead, like the set of The Walking Dead, right?
Right.
I mean, once it's dinner time, man, it's tumbleweeds and zombies and nothing's open. And we find out about this like kind of cool like beard garden hipster food court idea thing that's in downtown Houston. We're like, well, that's our only place that's going to be open. And we're doing the game together on TV, and I look around, and the stage manager, who is the person who like hands me the promos to read and everything, that's how you find out about the Robinson Cano bobbleheads.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
Yeah. So she's literally pen to paper drawing Blow a map on how to walk from Minute Maid Park to this whatever the place was. And I'm like, I literally haven't seen somebody do this in a decade.
And he's yelling for like, I need a compass. Yeah. I need to know which way is like, north. No, where's due north?
Where's the hotel? Where's the hotel?
Give me a landmark.
Yeah. And I'm just like, whoa, man. Like we're going together, dude. Like, just tell me what it's called. I'll get us there. And so I left after he did. We were there for like over an hour. And I'm like, peace out. I'm going back to the hotel. And Blow ended up at the ballpark on his way back to the hotel. So...
The fun thing about this, Aaron, is that because for most of us that have these degrees of separation between what you guys are doing, like these are we kind of fill in the gaps of what we assume based on your personalities on air. And just to hear it, like this is exactly the persona that we've created from Mike Flowers in our heads over years and years, you know. So to hear that this is exactly right.
We've molded him so well.
It's just like
Blow is like he is. I love Blow to death. I truly consider him a friend. He's a tremendous person. He's a very simple person. He loves his family more than anything else. He will spend as much time with his family as he possibly can. He loves his job. He loves his family more, which I think is great for all of us to keep in mind, no matter what you do for a living. And he basically wants a red piece of meat, a baseball game, and his slippers.
He's Ron Swanson.
And his yeah. slippers.
And those are the three things that'll make Mike Blowers a very happy person.
Are they embroidered MB?
No, I think on the heel of one it says Blower and on the other it says Power. I'm pretty sure.
Just says Wakefield's daddy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It really crushed the Canuckler.
I told that story to you because that was what he was famous for back in the 90s when he was with.
Oh, believe me, man. And anytime we, like, the rarity when we face, like, we're going to face Dickie here in Toronto, and like when we face Steven Wright of the Red Sox, it's just like, time now for Blowers on baseball. Well, Blow, you crushed Wakefield. So, all right, Nostradamus, tell us how you do it. But if it's high, let it fly. If it's low, let it go. Okay, cut. Thank you. Breaking some new ground here.
Oh, yeah. I will say that how long Mike's been with the team doing color longer than you've been with the team. Is that right?
For sure. This, I believe I'm very confident saying this is his, I want to say, 10th year.
Yeah, and that's really snuck up. But he has become such an amazingly informative color guy to listen to. Like, oh, you can listen great. To that guy do color in a game and pick out little nuances of things that you truly would not get from somebody who has not played the game. And he won't listen to this, so he's not going to hear you making fun of him or me praising
him. Podcast? What's a podcast? Yeah. Is that on my phone?
Yeah, exactly.
He's got no clue.
Exactly. But he really, I mean, I'm not trying to butter the guy up. I've said it before. He's just, he is an incredibly rewarding person to listen to talk about baseball on the air. So,
well, he obviously knows the nuances, but he can communicate it, and he can communicate it succinctly.
Yep.
And one of the things that I've learned in our, I guess now, second season of working together on a quasi-regular basis is, especially when the game gets late, and if it's a good game, so that means it's a close game,
yeah,
and we're in the seventh, especially eighth, and most definitely the ninth inning, like, I really have to kind of taper back the things that I'm saying, because if so-and-so brings in their closer and I want to talk, and I've got a 30-second nugget on whatever, like, I better make that 10 or 15 seconds because Mike is probably seeing something that's, like, way more important. Mm. And if I don't shut up, then he's going to have to either cram it in there or he's going to have to – he won't have any time to say it. And now whatever that is more important than what I have to say. And so I've learned that just by failure and by observation working alongside him that, man, when it gets close, that's when he's at his best. And that's when I need to really dial it back and when he needs to really pump it up because he does that naturally so well. And, yeah, close ball games, especially with Mike, the nuances that he points out are just awesome.
Yeah.
So he's a really, really good guy to work with.
Aaron, are you worried that you're going to have to start prepping a new walk-off call? Are you getting tired of using that one yet? Because two out of the last three games.
Like Mariners land? Yeah, I'm like, oh, they do it again.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, it's great, but it just seems like, I mean, you called baseball for years and years before you got hired by the team. Have you ever been a part of a team that's hit this many walk-off home runs in a season?
Boy, I was thinking about today, even Martin. I'm like, God, a guy like Martin, who, like, let's face it, entering this year, not a home run hitter, has run into more than he has ever.
Yep.
Like, the odds of a guy like Leonis Martin hitting two walk-off homers in the same season, like, think about it. Like, a lot of things really have to go in order for that to happen. And then add to the fact that there's now been six. I mean, yeah, the fact that it ties a franchise record kind of helps put it in perspective a little
crazy.
Bit. No, I really don't think I have. It's been ridiculous, man. Like, it's been absolutely ridiculous.
And none of them from the guys you'd expect. Like you said, two from Martin, two from Adam Lind, who is a power guy. But then none from Cano, none from Cruz, none from Seager. All from guys that you would have kind of figured aren't going to be that kind of a hero. Yeah, it's been really strange.
Yeah. I will say that one Cano dropped in Cleveland because they
basically
were away.
A walk-off.
Yeah.
Walk-off.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, good point. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was pretty manly.
I was wondering, Aaron, if one of them sticks out more than the rest of you, because one of them does to me.
Ooh. Oh, no. I would say probably the one that sticks out immediately, my gut answer would be Dejo.
Okay.
The one in
April.
Texas? I mean, what, against Texas? I mean?
Yeah, you know, Nathan, for it to be a walk-off, you have to be at home. So
see,
it has to be the bottom of the inning. And
learned
you
so much from Mike Blowers, and now you're passing it on to me.
Except for that one time against the Marlins.
Oh, nailed it.
Gotcha.
Birthday boy coming in strong. I like that.
You were what, 13 when that game was played, David?
7.
Okay.
Dejo, just because, I mean, the Mariners hadn't won a home game that year.
Right.
Up to that point, you know, they had lost, what, 3 against the A's and 2 against, so they lost 5 in a row.
2-6, and people were calling the season over.
Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, it's just like, boy, this sucks, man.
Yep.
And
you're telling me.
Yeah, and here you got Dejo, who at the time we really still knew nothing about.
Yeah.
Right. And you got Diekman just breathing fire.
Yeah, 99.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, this, and at that time we were all like, oh, leg kick, this guy's toast, man. Like, he needs to start his leg kick when the catcher's like throwing it back to Diekman, and then maybe he'll be able to get around in time on this fastball. So that one, which one? I'm curious, which one stands out to you the most?
For me, that first Leonis walk-off.
Agreed. For me, the
same
thing.
That one was outrageous. I also was there, so.
Oh, that helps.
But also, just the emotion of that final two innings was crazy.
The one strike away from defeat. The team was already playing well, and at that point, when he hit that one, it felt like, man, this could be anything this year. Yeah, they're
invincible. Yeah, you're right.
You know, you were talking about Dejo too. I was at the game a couple weeks ago against Baltimore where he hit a home run, and I had a perspective right behind him that I've never had before, and that you don't get on TV. He really does pick his foot up like amazingly early. Like the pitcher's,
yeah, he's on his back foot forever.
The pitcher's leg comes up at the same time as Dejo's. It's remarkable that guy is able to both turn on a fastball and keep his hands back long enough to drive the ball the other way. I don't know how he does it.
Yeah, you remember that game in Oakland when he hit two dingers and the one of them came off of Axford?
Yep.
And so it's like, oh, what's service doing? Axford's a righty, Dejo's a righty.
Yeah.
You know? And what's happening? And the one that he hit. So he hit one oppo, and then the extra one he pulled the left. And man, not only did he start his leg kick like an hour early, I mean, he opened up. I mean, he like his whole belt buckle was like pointed towards like Manny Acta coaching at third base.
There was only one place that ball was ever going.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was just like, what is this guy doing? And then he just killed it. So and how great, by the way, is that like gong chain that he wears?
My God.
Like, I'd be concussed if I was running and that thing like hit me in the face.
Well, he's not usually running.
No, that's true. I mean, he has like, you know, I noticed this the other day. He has like 5 doubles.
Yep.
He's got 5 doubles, 12 homers, 17 extra base hits.
He had one of his doubles was into right where I can't remember exactly. Somebody dove. On right field, it was a ball down the right field line, and the outfielder dove, missed it, and it kicked off into the right field corner, and Dejo stopped at second, and it was like, well, he's literally never going to hit a triple.
Yes, I remember that. I totally remember that.
Because that, you know, that was an inside-the-park home run for, like, Ketel Marte, and Dejo had to stop at second.
You know, he really should have a 6th double if he could slide into the second base and didn't have gravity take over. Remember when he fell off the bag at second?
Yes,
yes.
That was awesome. That was fantastic.
There was another moment, another game that David and I were at where who were they playing? It was another game that they won. But Dejo came into second, and the shortstop couldn't throw the ball to first. And I think it's almost because Dejo was so big that the shortstop could not see the first baseman, first base. Like, that was the only thing that explained the play. Like, Dejo was running right at him. And he's such – because I've talked about this before. He's not just like a wide guy. He's huge.
He's tall. He's huge.
He's like 6'7", 290. He's just a mountain, you know? So I love that guy so much. I don't know if he'll be here next year, but it's what a fun. Dejo Lee is one of the things that makes baseball great.
Awesome. And he's been such a fun storyline for this team this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, and they could use some fun because, you know, like we were talking, they looked invincible in late May, and the last 6 weeks or so have been not great. I think they're 9-8 in July now, so they've been trickling up. It just feels like they're not catching a lot of breaks with injuries, and it feels like they've lost a lot of winnable close one-run games, which feels strange for a team that just walked off 2 of their last 3 games to say that they're
getting
lucky.
Yeah, they won 2 out of 3 and never led.
Never, they did not lead during
how bizarre is that?
Through, yeah. But it still feels like I don't know how you guys are feeling about it on your end. It feels like this is a better team than we've had. This is your fourth year, right?
Correct.
Team, and if this feels like the best Mariner team in that stretch.
Oh, in the last four, for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, in 2014's team, I think won 86 or 7 games, and it just feels like this team has more than what they've shown. Do you feel that way too?
Well, I think it's definitely the best team since I've been here. There's no doubt about that. I think you had this horrible, horrible perfect storm of injuries and the schedule just becoming so tough.
Yeah, really tough.
I think for kind of a casual fan, and most people who are listening to this podcast aren't much more than casual fans, I realize, but for the majority of the fan base, you're kind of like looking at the paper every once in a while, looking at your friend like, man, why are the Mariners suddenly losing all these games? And a lot of baseball fans only focus on their team and they don't realize what's going on around the league. I mean, I'm aware of that. And it's just like, man, ever since, like, you can kind of circle it. You know what it was? It was ever since they got swept in Texas, 3 games, weekend series. Mm-hmm. Ever since that, the schedule to the All-Star break, I remember looking at it when we were, I guess, maybe on the last road trip. There were, like, literally two teams that the Mariners played that were beneath 500.
Mm-hmm.
And all the teams were just gripping and ripping. And it seems like you're seeing at least one of the opening day starters, one of the aces in every series. I mean, look at the White Sox. You just saw Sale and Quintana,
yep,
right, in 2 of the 3 games. And then the injuries. I mean, Felix is obviously the one you feel the most. But with Cattell being out, and he's had different spurts of between the ankle, now he's been ill, and then, of course, the DL.
Yeah.
And then Martin. I mean, gosh, when those two guys are out, man,
yeah, just, that kills you.
Totally different team.
Yeah,
totally different.
It's been, and that's been one of the differences this year, is that it's felt like for the first time in years, and no disrespect to the people that came before, they had, you know, strong players up the middle, which they haven't had forever. Shortstop and center field and catcher have been bugaboos for this franchise for so long, and to have Leonis and Cattell, and then Chris Iannetta was off to a really nice start. He's been slumping more recently, and then to see both of Cattell and Leonis going down. I think the bullpen injuries have just killed them too. Like, just, they have a whole bullpen almost still on the DL, and it's I mean, the
Do you remember the guy named Tony Zick?
Yeah. I know. And then guys like we spent thousands of words in February and March saying, hey, Evan Scribner, Ryan Cook, these are decent buy low pickups. They could really help the team this year. Never seen him, you know?
Yeah.
Charlie Furbush, the only good part of this bullpen last year. Haven't seen him at all this year. So it makes trading somebody like Mike Montgomery a little scary, but I am really excited about Vogelbach. So it should be a lot of fun. But yeah, it feels like the team's had some really bad luck. But the schedule is about to get a lot easier. Do you guys like, I think you have what, 3, counting today, you have 3 off days in the next 8 days? That can't be something that you and the players like, right? Like, the schedule's ridiculous in a different way?
I mean, I guess if you've got like a swollen foot like Nelson Cruz,
right,
after, you know, maybe it's a good thing. I think, especially this time of year, I don't know what Jerry would say, but when you're trying to learn something about your team coming up on the deadline, and you got 3 off days in the span of, like, what, 10 days or something like that?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of rough. Yep. for a number of different reasons. And, hey, a day off is always welcomed with the grind that is the Major League season. But when you see 3 of them in this short of a span, you're like, let's not get stretched out? Can we not drop one of these a little bit later?
Especially the travel you're doing. Your off days are Toronto to Pittsburgh. And
right,
Pittsburgh to Chicago, after all the games where you've gone from like Tampa Bay with no break to Texas with no break back to Seattle, and you're getting like basically days.
Yeah, we could take a Greyhound from one of these towns to another, yeah, and yeah, we have an off day. Although I'm not going to complain about an off day in Chicago.
No, that sounds fine.
Yeah, that sounds all right.
Are you a deep dish guy, Aaron?
You know, I'm not.
Yeah, the boy.
Skiba, how you feel? How you feel about this?
Oh, I think his computer had to restart for a little bit there. He'll be back with us here.
Yeah, I didn't even notice he was gone.
Yeah, I didn't either. It's fine.
Yeah.
How are you feeling with deep dish? It's just not your thing?
It takes way too long. You know, it's like you place your order, and if the restaurant's busy, it's like, well, you'll be eating in an hour.
Right.
And so that I don't like. It's just like so heavy. And some of those places put enough cheese in there to just choke a maggot. And I mean, hey, we all like cheese, but everything in proportion. Yeah, I'm just I have tried it in Chicago at a place not named Uno's.
That's where I've had it.
At the airport.
Yep.
I don't hate it, but I will never seek it. I'll never seek it out.
Yeah, it's not my thing. Are you a pizza guy otherwise?
100% love pizza.
Okay. So yeah. So this is not a problem of like you not enjoying the food. It's just not your thing. I think that's totally fine. I don't get this idea of, I don't know how you feel about, we were talking before we came on the break about trying to do, I feel like a lot of food tries to get too fancy, not too fancy, tries to do too many things. We had talked about the swordfish that you had had that was extremely simple. You just had what, salt and pepper and
right.
Just the fish steak.
And good fish.
If you get the right ingredients, man, let the stuff speak for itself. And Chicago style deep dish is the exact opposite of that. So,
all right, here's a pizza food tip for any Mariners fans making their way to spring training. Have we talked about, we had to have talked about Pizzeria Bianco last time I was on because I was in spring training.
We didn't talk about it, but that is one of my very favorite places in all of the world.
You've been?
I've been to spring training the last 5 years and been to Bianco every year. I love that place.
Dude.
We usually try to go about 3:30 so we get there before the rush.
Yes. Oh, that's a great pro tip. You have to. Yeah.
Otherwise it gets crazy. Yeah. You love that place too?
Oh, man. We go there easily once a week during spring.
You have to, man. It's so good. The food in Phoenix is really good.
It is a good food town. Do you go to the one like near downtown Phoenix, or do you go to the one like off Camelback that's in kind of like a very pretty strip mall type?
Yeah, thing? I went to that one once and just didn't feel it nearly as much. That one down downtown, that downtown area is pretty cool. There's a couple other places down there whose names are totally slipping my mind, but Bianco's the place you got to go. I mean, that is...
Bianco is just sensational. And the problem is that you learn that they, more than just their pizza is really good.
Right.
Like their pastas are insane. So yeah, we end up like, even if it was just my wife and I, we end up ordering like two pizzas and a pasta and then we eat it the rest for lunch the next day. It's just one of my, I would say Pizzeria Bianco is probably my favorite part of spring training.
I think that's the highlight of our trip too. And you're not,
it's the greatest.
You're not as much of an alcohol guy. There's a place called, called Magnum's, Cigars and Whiskey in, again, I feel like 2/3 of the places in Phoenix are in strip malls. And this place, right. it looks like a place where you would actually go to buy something completely different that's named Magnum's. But you go in there and it just opens up into this palatial parlor. And it's just absolutely unreal the amount of whiskey and high quality beer and cigar that let you. Because I think you can still smoke inside in Arizona in certain places. And it's if you ever feel so inclined, Magnum's in Phoenix is a very special place. But yeah, so I want to talk real quick about Taco Bell while we're talking food.
I didn't see this coming.
No, not at
no,
all.
Not
when we
all.
Put out Twitter Q&A and like we got probably 45 or 50 questions or so about Taco Bell.
Like people don't know my name, but they know that I'm like the Taco Bell broadcaster.
Is that gone national for you?
Oh, I will say this. I guess the short answer is no, but I did get two tweets from the at Taco Bell.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I definitely screenshotted those, and I'll probably print them up on glossy and poster board and everything.
Got to get
else.
Them there. Just use it as your business card whenever you go somewhere. Hey, I'm the Taco Bell tweet guy.
Yeah, it was pretty epic.
So that didn't start as like a celebratory meal, right? That's just you living big league life, getting out of the stadium after midnight, having to grab some food on the way home, correct?
Yeah, so like, I mean, I grew up in St. Louis, and I got to tell you, man, T-Bell drive-through in St. Louis, alternating nights with the White Castle. It's disgusting, but I love it.
I'm going to look up Yelp reviews for Taco Bells in St. Louis while you keep talking.
Yeah. In fact, I went to the Taco Bell drive-through as a college student in St. Louis so often that I got to know the drive-through, the main drive-through worker. Her name was Shala.
Ooh.
And every time Shala heard my voice, I got a free large Pepsi. So
nice. You didn't have to say your name. She just heard your voice.
Yeah, I was just like...
The first time that voice got you something.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. So, yeah, man, I've been crushing Taco Bell my whole life. It's continued, and then I especially crushed it in the minors when I had zero money.
Right.
I had, like, negative money for some years in the minors. And, you know, taste buds, sometimes they just don't change, man. And so there is a fairly convenient Taco Bell on my route home. And so... Yeah, a lot of times, like, I am starving after games more times than not.
Sure.
And because, you know, just sitting there and talking about baseball really takes it out of you.
Of course, yeah. That sounds like a real grind.
It's a real grind, man. It's super grind. Oh. And, so one time I was – actually, it was when Martin hit the walk-off against Oakland, I believe, was the game. And I'm like, I'm so fired up. I'm not even that hungry. I'm gonna go get crazy at T-Bell. And I put that tweet out there, and, yeah – my life has never been the same since.
Well, I'm going to read you some highlights here really quick because I think we have some Twitter Q&As. And are you okay to stick around for a few more minutes?
100%.
Awesome. So I want to do a little Twitter Q&A after our break. But first, I found this. Have you ever been to the Taco Bell on Skinker Boulevard in the West End of St. Louis? Does that ring a bell at all?
Skinker is a very popular road in St. Louis, but I have not been to that one. What do you got?
I've got this. This gentleman is rated at 5 stars. James F. from Florissant, Missouri.
A Florissant, but whatever. That's cool.
You know, I wouldn't know. I'm just reading it how it's spelled. I don't have that Midwestern fancy pronunciation guide in front of me. But he rated it 5 stars. He said, I've been to this location 3 Saturdays in a row and thought I owed them a bump. So I assume this gentleman's related to you.
I think so.
Yeah. So number one, his key point, and it's hard to argue with this, hot food every time he ate there. So
that is questionable sometimes with T-Bell, I got to admit.
They had his food in under 3 minutes each time. He tends to judge a lot of places by their bathrooms, and theirs, T-H-E-I-E-R-S, have been really clean each time. And the people working here work hard and still are very nice to customers. So I hope you give this location a chance. They are awesome. So the next time you're back home visiting family, you should definitely go to the West End. Skinker, Taco Bell.
See, this educated gentleman and I have one difference, and that is my pretty firm rule when it comes to Taco Bell. For as much of a T-Bell lover as I am, it's fourth meal only, and it's exclusively drive-through.
Yes.
I do not want inside the sausage factory. I do not want to know how that's made.
You are not investigating the bathrooms of your local Taco Bell.
Not a chance. I will find an alley gutter someplace before I use a T-Bell bathroom. And I don't know. I mean, T-Bells have, like, they're starting to spiff them up now. Like, it's kind of like Club T-Bell.
Yeah, this place looks like a Club T-Bell. It absolutely does. Like, the disco ball could drop after midnight and they start playing jams.
Yeah, but the T-Bell that I grew up on in St. Louis, man, there was like some smell inside, and you're just like, this. It's like that dirty bleach smell.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they've tried really hard to clean this, but like the murder that they're covering up, like I still smell it.
It was my insides that died.
Yeah, so I'm telling you, man, if T-Bell doesn't come through a window, I'm not eating it.
Well, I feel like I should offer a contrary opinion from Kent C. from Fresh Meadows of Queens, New York, who was at the same Taco Bell for some
reason. Oh.
He says it's probably the worst Taco Bell he has been to in his entire life. And you can tell me whether he's judging this on the right merit, because I haven't been to Taco Bell probably since high school, just personal preference. I'm a big fan of Crunch Wraps. I love those things, but every time I get them here, I am always amazed by the lack of crunchiness, which makes it a wrap, right?
Just a wrap. It's a wrap supreme.
Yeah. Also, last time I checked, Taco Bell was a fast food joint, so please be fast. I'm the only dang person here. See, maybe he is Midwestern. That sounds very polite. I'm the only dang person. And you have two or three people.
That's Minnesota.
Oh, hi, David.
Oh,
hey.
Skiba.
Hey,
you went away.
Were you blowing your birthday candles out or something?
So about 17. This is an incredible feat of computing and how I know that technology's gone too far. About 17 minutes ago, my computer flashed an alert and it said automatic restart scheduled for 15 minutes. And there was no choice. It was just the computer was telling me what it was going to do.
And it did it.
And it did it.
Probably exactly 15 minutes from now. I don't see a problem.
I mean, I'm glad that we're just letting these take over our lives.
Oh, it's already happened. You could ask Mike Blowers about that. He'd tell you all about it.
Yeah.
Someone's tracking him right now.
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad you're back. I was reading Aaron Yelp reviews for St. Louis Taco Bells.
Oh, we're looking ahead?
Yeah. We're planning the next road trip. No, we were actually getting ready to go to break, and then we were going to do some Twitter Q&A. So,
perfect.
Yeah. So, Aaron, thanks for sticking with us. We'll be back in a few more minutes with some Twitter Q&A. Run away, but hold her down with soggy clothes and breeze blocks. Cedrazine, your fever's greet me again. Never kisses, or do you ever send a full stop? Do you know where the waffles go? They go along.
take your honey. Right down how we build our breakfast down and say my love, my love, love, love. La 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 la, macho to macho, to chow, to chow.
And we're back. Davis Giva is nice enough to rejoin us still after his computer rebooted for absolutely no reason. Aaron Goldsmith is still with us, and we are going to do your Twitter questions. We are very thankful for those of you that sent those in, especially the two of you who did not tweet us about Taco Bell.
Thank you.
Yes, in particular, thank you to you, too. David, what is our first Twitter question today?
So our first question ties off of the last time we recorded our podcast, and it comes from Josh Kuh, who you can find at Josh Kuh, the number 44. He asks if Aaron is team pizza or team burrito. And Aaron, let me give you a backstory on this question. The answer to this question relates to if you had to only have one for the rest of your life and you can never have the other, would you choose pizzas or burritos?
No, I'm kidding. I'm here.
We so richly deserve that.
Yeah.
I thought Aaron had just decided to just go.
My technology works. Don't worry.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I'm sure. You're big time. You get the fancy new computers that actually work all the time.
Yeah, it's way better than brewery technology.
They don't run your life, apparently. Mine do.
You know, I think when I first heard that question, I thought it was kind of tough, and then I think it's kind of a no-brainer. I'm a team pizza guy.
Yeah, Aaron, preach.
Yeah, it's really a no-brainer because, hey, burritos, delicious. I mean, who doesn't love burritos? But God, I mean, like, a pizza can be so many different, like a pizza can be like almost like fine dining.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, right? Let's not go crazy.
Pizzeria Bianco in Phoenix,
yeah,
man.
Skiba, I liked it better when your computer was shut down.
Yeah, go back, David, go do some updates.
Yeah.
Why don't you guys read some Yelp reviews for St. Louis Taco Bells?
Hey, you know what? That was good podcasting. You wouldn't know because you weren't here. That's why it was so damn good.
I caught the tail end of it. The Crunchorita wasn't crispy.
Yeah, Crunchwrap.
That was the best part. You got it there right in time.
Yeah.
No, I think, like, a pizza, I mean, hey, man, when I was calling AA ball as an intern, getting paid $600 a month in Portland, Maine,
fun.
And I had zero money, my Sunday home game, after Sunday home games in Portland, Maine, man, all I had money for was a $5 hot and ready.
Yeah.
You know?
I've terrible lived off pizza. Of that in college.
Yeah, terrible, man. Oh, God, horrible. Mm-hmm.
But see, you can get a... Oh, come on, guys. You can get a burrito truck burrito for $5. That's way better.
What you were but like? You were like Lucille Bluth in Arrested Development. How much could a banana cost? $10. Have you ever had a burrito?
Have you ever been to a burrito truck?
The point is that the pizza can be the food of complete survival, like it was for me in Portland, Maine. When other people were eating lobster rolls, I was eating the pizza and the cardboard box.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And or it can be, as we mentioned, Pizzeria Bianco, where you're like, so really, $23 for this pizza? Oh, it actually tastes like it's $50.
Yep. Yep.
And it runs the whole gamut. Burritos.
Come on. $50 for a pizza.
You haven't been there. You bailed on spring training this year, so you've never had it, man. I'm telling you. Pizzeria Bianco in Phoenix.
Here's what I'll say about pizza. If someone tells me I'm going to have a gourmet pizza, I'm not going to Peoria, Arizona.
It's not in Peoria.
It's not in Peoria.
Okay, ass. Scottsdale's even worse.
It's not in Scottsdale. Shut your mouth. You don't know what you're talking
real
about.
You're a real pile. You have no clue. I mean, Nathan, you and I can at least appreciate this. This, when you walk into a pizzeria that has a wood-fired oven, right? Mm-hmm. You just smell that. It's. I mean, that is the most romantic smell, I think, in all the food.
I totally agree. Yeah. It's
incredible.
It's just, there's nothing like it. And there's no way that a burrito could possibly compare to that.
No, a burrito is phenomenal.
Yep, I mean, it's great.
I've had thousands of them.
Yep.
But, dude, Skiba, I don't know what your problem is, dude. This is a real issue.
My problem is I like delicious foods and not just like bready messes.
Okay,
tomato
so here's what's going to happen.
Oh, God. Is all you've had Little Caesar? Like, this is a serious question. Like, is your pizza diet from like Papa John's to Little Caesars and like the occasional Domino's? I mean, is
no,
that what you're
no,
with
I've had plenty of delicatessen style and delicious pizzas. However,
I don't think that proves the point.
There's
I don't
no think delicatessen. Delicatessen pizza.
Like we're not getting shredded lettuce and Swiss almonds. There's no stone ground mustard.
Well, I've had pizza. The man told me it was real.
You literally have no idea what you're talking about right now.
Welcome to Lookout Landing, Aaron.
God.
All day, every day with this shit. I'm telling you. It's ridiculous. David, what's our next question?
Okay, do you guys want to go towards baseball or stay on food?
Aaron, do you have a preference?
I have zero preference.
Okay. We got a question from Stephen DeYoung, who you can find at Stephen DeYoung 93, the number 93, who asks, do you prefer Burger King or McDonald's? And for me, it's easy. It's Burger King because of the fries.
Well, our separation of life continues. I'm a McDonald's guy.
Oh,
I wouldn't even, let me tell you something. I wouldn't even think about going to Burger King.
Does Burger King even have burgers on their menu anymore? Didn't they go into like some sort of weird burrito / sub sandwich alt universe?
Like delicatessen thing?
It's an artisanal ham sandwich at Burger King or something like that?
That sounds good.
Let me tell you something. Last year, I was calling a basketball game in Pullman.
Oh,
it was, nice. Yeah, but it was actually a good game. It was the Cougs versus the Zags, right? I was pretty fired up for it.
Okay.
And it was like one of these late, like 8 o'clock tips. So I normally get to the arena like 2 hours before. And so I'm like, man, I got to eat something because this game's going to not get into like 10. And so what's right down the street from Beasley? Mickey D's.
Mm.
Roll up there, a couple cheeseburgers, a Coke, and an order of fries. And I'm sitting in the parking lot in the wintertime in Pullman crushing this. And I'm like, just like when Dan Shulman calls like Duke UNC, right? Like in Chapel Hill, does he like drive through Mickey D's in Chapel Hill in his rental car and order up a couple of cheese? I don't think that he does that. So that was a nice little.
He's a guy that does it for him, I'm sure. Goes there and eats it for him.
Yeah.
Can I throw in a third name, or can I throw in two more names to the ring?
I'm also McDonald's. Just to be very clear, go ahead.
Because if I throw in Wendy's and Jack in the Box, things change exponentially.
Wendy's. There's no choice.
It's back. The new Portobello Mushroom Buttery Jack. Taste it before it's gone.
It is you on those commercials. I've thought that for years.
Like, you know, at a certain point, like, you can't say that it's back when we've been reading that for, you know, since spring training. You know what I mean?
The only thing they have at Jack in the Box is the curly fries are fine.
Oh, Jack in the Box is good to me.
Have you guys had the tacos at Jack in the Box?
No, I go to Taco Bell for the tacos.
I go to Taco Time for the tacos.
Man, you are so screwed up. Every decision you make is wrong. Happy birthday.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Oh, my God. All right, what about a baseball question?
Assuming this injury, he isn't sustained. Wow, this is a weirdly worded tweet. Assuming this injury he just sustained, I will insert a word here, isn't major, when do you expect to see Lewis in the MLB?
Well, it is major.
Yeah, ACL, I would call it fairly major. I have no idea. I have absolutely no clue. I know like people think that in our line of work that we're – and I mean, I understand. I'm not knocking this person. I completely understand why somebody would think that I would know the answer to that. But I have – between – not knowing how quickly he can come back from it, not knowing what he'll be like when he returns from it, not knowing how quickly they want to push him through the minors, how quickly he naturally gets through the minor, you know, all those factors, right? I've got no clue. I was really bummed to, as we all were, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny, the day after it happened, I ran into Tommy Allison, who's kind of Jerry's right-hand
good
man.
Good guy.
Great guy, phenomenal hair, just
all
around.
He does have great hair, I agree.
He's got great hair.
Yeah, he looks like your dad, kind of.
He loves to eat well.
I mean, I don't know what your dad looks like, but he looks like he could be your father.
I'll pass that along to him.
Okay, please do.
I appreciate that.
Have a camera everywhere.
When I talked to Tommy, at the time, he really believed that it was nothing too serious. So I think this kind of caught.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Got a lot of people off guard that turned out to be as serious as it was.
Yeah.
Too bad.
I would say I think that generally speaking, for somebody drafted in Lewis's position after his junior year of college, the earliest you would realistically expect him to be?
3 years.
Would be, I would say, if he really caught fire and was amazing and became a real top prospect, you could see him get into a September call-up of 2017, maybe pushing for mid-year 2018, realistically.
Yeah, I'd put him off to 18 with an ACL.
And now you, well, no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Now push all of that back a year. Because he's losing basically a year of development time. So if he's up here by the end of 2018, it's awesome. Looking more like 2019, and that's all assuming that he's healthy. It really sucks. It has actually kind of brought the entire mood of the podcast down. So,
well, actually, now that we've brought the mood down, I'm about to bring it right back up with, I'm sure, one of the three of all favorite movies, Ocean's 11.
I like Ocean's 11.
Quality.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm a 13 fan, but 11's great as well.
I never saw it.
Better than 12.
Couldn't be much worse.
Really couldn't get worse than Ocean's 12.
Which is the one where, like, Julia Roberts has
that's
a holograph
12.
Head. Okay.
That was a bad movie, objectively.
Yeah.
Not good. So what's the question?
We get a question from Leonard Sue, who you can find at Leonard_Sue.
Mm-hmm.
You make a prequel heist film, Ocean's 10. Which current M's do you pick, and what are their jobs?
Jeez, that's a lot of Mariners to pick.
Also, what's our heist?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where you really have to go off of, right?
I mean, do I have to make jokes now about the Mariners stealing bases and how bad they are at it?
Oh, boy.
I don't want to do that. It's the obvious, easy joke. But, so, I don't know. What do you need for? So, you need a bag man, you need a driver, you need a...
Well, we're not talking about a heist in the 1950s. Times have changed.
So, is this digital crime?
There's a lot of... You have to get... into the cameras.
If it's so, you know who's
so Seth Smith on the cameras.
Seth Smith is the mastermind because nobody suspects him.
Mm.
You know, he just looks like a normal dude.
I actually think that's Adam Lind.
Adam Lind is the mastermind.
He seems like he has a poker face.
Aaron, can I ask you a question? You know these guys a little bit. We kind of feel like Adam Lind seems like a pretty low key, interesting dude. Is that an accurate summation of him?
I think that's really pretty accurate. Yeah, he's definitely low key,
but there's more to him than meets the eye, right?
Yes, no, I think that's very true because he's from the Hoosier state,
right?
And yet he dude, I'm telling you, man, he loves Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Like he met his wife in Toronto.
Yeah.
Yep. He's got a place here, so I'm sure the off day has been great for him. I'm not kidding you, man.
Adam Lind has a place in Toronto.
Yeah. He drives, like, not the old kind, but, like, the new kind of a Volkswagen Bug.
Really?
100%.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Do you know what color it is?
It's white.
Oh, my.
So you just look for that driving around Capitol Hill and Queen Anne and just some...
And I'm just like... And, like, he dresses... Like, when you see him, like, dress for the team flights and stuff, like... He dresses like a guy who is willing to devote some capital to how he looks, even though it might not be how you would envision yourself looking, right? Like, in like the realm of the guy that he is, which is what we're saying, he's a country guy who's actually kind of hip,
right?
Right,
like weirdly cosmopolitan.
Yeah, yes. Like, okay, go let it eat, man. Go after it.
Because he looks so Hoosier-y in a baseball uniform. Like, he's got dad bod.
The facial hair is not.
He's got the bass player of a heavy metal band. Somehow,
like, the sleeves on his jersey are, like, shorter than everybody's.
Just to show the bottom third of the tattoo.
Yeah, just to show, like, the barbed wire tattoo or whatever. You know, I mean, it's just.
Got this
like,
way at Folsom in 04.
And, like, the flat bill on the ball cap.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous look. But I assume that it's intentional. Based off what you're saying.
Yes, like I think he like and he's Adam's a pretty quiet guy. He's a respectful, nice enough guy, but he's not super gregarious to people in our line of work.
Sure.
He loves Hoosier basketball. He loves Toronto. He drives a Volkswagen Bug. I mean, that's basically the demographic
and
right there.
And
right?
He has one kick-ass walk-off celebration.
Yeah,
it is pretty sweet.
That shooting the three. That's
I asked him about it the other day. How good of a high school basketball player he was, and he said his dad was the wrestling coach.
Of course.
He never got to play.
So that was his way of saying not very good.
Yeah, I
guess so. That was his way of saying that that first one that went way to the right was his true talent.
Basically. I'm totally off of the original question. I find Adam Lind to be a fascinating dude, and I
like him. I even though his post game interviews are always like super disjointed, and it's clear he'd rather been doing anything else. You can just tell he's holding back, and I love it.
Yep, like Jay Buhner if he held back.
I cannot picture that world.
I don't think anybody actually can. David, we have
a question from Dan Gomez.
Okay, friend of the
who asks of Aaron, do you enjoy calling a pitcher's duel or an offensive explosion more?
9 times out of 10, a pitcher's duel.
Really?
Like, yeah, because I get, like, say, and let's assume for a second that it's a pitcher's duel that is one. That looks like it's going to be one even sure. before the game starts,
yeah,
right?
Like so two not, aces.
Right, yes, exactly. Yeah. It's like Sale versus Felix or whatever. First of all, the excitement that I have from the moment I start preparing for that broadcast is unlike any other, like versus like Marco Estrada versus Erasmo Ramirez, right? Like you can't compare. Yay. So,
well,
to each their own. To each their own. I don't want to say names. All right, people like
random pitch, generic like, pitcher in Toronto versus random generic pitcher in Tampa Bay. We got you covered.
Right, bingo. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the excitement of that, and then there's this feeling, and you guys know this as a fan. There's this feeling of, oh my gosh,
this is a game.
Yeah, we just scored a run.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
that could be it. Or the other way around, like they just scored a run.
It's over.
How are we going to do this? Right. So like now every 90 feet means something.
Okay.
Okay.
The drama's heightened.
Drama side, and now it has such a more intense feel to it. Now, I guess the only exception of it is, we all love those games where, like, kind of out of nowhere, like they always are, all of a sudden one team pops like 5 bombs, the other one drops 3, somebody has a grand slam, and it's just like back and forth, right? I mean, that's, you get like, in normal seasons, meaning not the 2016 Mariners, you get like 2 of those a year.
Right.
We get like 2 of those a month, it seems like.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a different feel for you calling those two different kinds of games, TV versus radio? Like, would an offensive explosion be more fun to call on TV?
Boy, good question. Let me think about that.
Just because the viewer gets more of the, I don't know.
It's more visually enjoyable. Like,
yeah.
You can paint more of a picture with radio, whereas the home offensive explosion speaks more visually. I don't know.
I would say, okay, first of all, I'd say more than either one of those. It's way more fun if it's at home.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing that sucks more than big home runs on the road.
Than a grand slam that nobody cheers.
You should just start hawking it, dude. Ball hit to right.
Just like,
White Sox lose 4-3.
And the White Sox lose 4-3.
Like, that is classic. I mean, like, big plays on the road when you're going nuts and there's nothing else. Right? Like,
yeah.
you can't lay out to silence like you can lay out if you're on TV or radio, lay out to 30,000 people going nuts.
You know, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
That's okay. I think on TV, like the Martin walk-off grand slam, like I love when moments like that happen and I'm on TV. One thing I feel like I've gotten better at doing a handful of TV games now each year is once that ball goes over the fence and I made my call and I shut up, I'm looking at I let the sound go, and I'm looking at the monitor, right? Because I want to see the shots that our producer and director are going to. Mike's going to likely say something very soon if he isn't already talking, saying it's something that just happened. And so now he's jumping and doing his thing. And now I'm just trying to caption this or that, right? And so the shots, like being a part of a broadcast where you have the power of, like the other day, 40,000 people, walk-off home run, day baseball,
nothing
beautiful
like
day at Safeco Field. It's just like, this is awesome. And like that moment on TV is maybe a little bit cooler than on radio. Just because I'm looking at the monitor and I'm like, I'm literally thinking of the people, like I'm literally watching it. Like the person on their couch is watching it.
Yeah.
Like my screen is a foot away from my
ahead.
Face.
Okay.
No, like mine's in real time. But like, I see what you're saying because it's got to beam up to the space and come back down. But like, you know what? Time out. I went to a luncheon 2 years ago with like the executive director of like Root Sports. Okay, like the boss. and some fan asked him, I try to sync the radio to the telecast, and I'm mad. I'm mad that it's 12 seconds off, right? And the president of Root Sports Northwest was like, well, we actually are pretty proud of that 12 seconds because it goes from Safeco Field to our studio in Bellevue to a satellite in wherever, like Charlotte, North Carolina, up to outer space.
To Jupiter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it literally
to the Andromeda galaxies.
To the moon, back down to whatever transformer in Seattle to your house in 12 seconds. So we feel pretty good about that. Wham! Just like...
just brought the hammer back, down on him.
Just backhanded this retired guy. I mean, just straight... And the guy just like...
My generation would have it down to five.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Greatest generation of all time.
We never landed on the moon.
I was going to ask you, because it's been so long since we've talked to you, and you see so many games, you see so many different things. There is one game from this year, since the last time that we talked, that I would kick myself later if we didn't ask you about, especially the experience of calling it. And you may already have an idea of what it was. It's the game in San Diego when they came back from 10 runs. Is that what it was? 12-2 and won 15-14. Because you have to be going through the first half. You get to a point in that game where you're like, okay, I know this
game is over.
And you put it in, not necessarily an autopilot, because you can't really do that with your job, but you're... You go into a certain mode, a certain mindset of like, hey, it's time to tell stories, sing Wabash Cannonball and all of that other stuff. At what point in a game like that does your radar kind of start to tingle a little bit, if that makes any sense?
No, for sure. That's a game. That game was obviously very vivid, and I thought about that game a ton that night, the next day, and the next day after that, and probably the week after that. Just from a broadcasting standpoint, a nuts and bolts standpoint of the whole thing, it's funny. It's like, well, what did I learn out of that? Although I will more than likely never have that experience again.
Right.
So like when I was on radio for that game, and when it got to me in the sixth inning, whatever the score was so horrible that literally an out into the top of the sixth inning, I started talking about, Clayton Kershaw and the dominance of National League pitching this year, because we're in a National League ballpark, right? Sure. Like if you look at the top 10 ERA leaders in baseball this year, like, are all from the National League. The strikeout guys are, it's just incredible, the dominance of National League pitching. So I was like, well, all right, I'll talk about that, because if I call balls and strikes for this game, I'm gonna fall asleep,
right?
And then we got a run, and then Dejo got that home run, which, oh my gosh. Yeah. Like from our vantage point in the booth, that ball looked like it was going to go midway up the video board in left field. I mean, it was just colossal.
Killed it.
I think it was a 3-run homer. And so now all of a sudden the Mariners are
within 7.
Yeah. They're not in arm's reach, but it's like, okay. Like you're thinking like, well, this isn't as embarrassing now.
It's 12-7. Yeah.
And then the seventh inning started to happen. And man, even though that seventh inning took forever, right? Cause there's like pitching changes and not to mention the fact that who knows how many hitters came to the plate. That inning went so fast, and I had such a hard time keeping up with just the pure madness of it, because the whole time you're like, this isn't, no, like this can't be happening. And then you're like, well, here's another run. Here's another. And then you just kind of started to, like, the fanboy in you comes out, and you're like, well, this is just, it's got to happen.
Yeah.
Right.
How is this not going to happen now? It was the most incredible thing I've ever seen in a baseball game, for sure. I will never see that again. I can almost confidently say.
Definitely.
And what it taught me was really needing to be able to slow down in your own head a game like that and a situation like that, because it went so fast.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain it, but like when you're on the air and you're live and you're trying to capture what's happening and your job just keeps hitting your scorebook, it was tough, man. It was really tough.
Did that?
But it was obviously a thrill.
Was it similar for you, like the first game or two that you called for the Mariners, your first major league games? Did you feel that same sort of accelerant feel in a big moment there where you just, my God, that was so quick. I blinked and it was over.
I've had that, obviously when you've had, like, the Chris Sale game where, like, all of a sudden we get four runs, and, like, that, you know, that was incredible. That was instantaneous.
That actually was a blink of an eye, though.
Right, yeah. And, like, it didn't build, like, nothing I've ever called has built like that.
Yeah.
We're in the span of six outs, right? You come from the grave, and all
of a sudden, leading the game.
Yeah, and now it's like, well, we're definitely winning this thing. So, I've never experienced that broadcasting anything ever, and I'll never forget it. I like how I'm saying that, and meanwhile, I'm like, well, I don't remember how many guys came to the plate.
All I remember was Sean O'Malley scored the winning run, like plated the winning run.
So he drove in.
Was it the tying?
He drove in the go-ahead run.
Line drive up the middle.
So, like, yeah, so to me, the greatest, the thing I will always remember from that game is that Sean O'Malley, 30 minutes, maybe 45 minutes before he drove in the go-ahead run, was warming up in the tunnel, loose.
Yes.
To be the emergency pitcher.
He went from
almost pitching in that game to driving in the go-ahead run.
And as hard as it is for you to call that, I just can't imagine at a high level, as a high-level athlete, trying to shift your brain, too. Like, the players are going through the same thing as well, I'm sure. Yeah. We're like, this is a game.
A
like,
paradigm shift of done. The game.
And you don't stop trying to grind out at bats, but you know what's going to happen to, like, oh, my God, like, this could actually happen. It's just got to be – it was incredible for us, so I wanted to make sure we asked you about it. I've never – the thing is, Aaron, I'm sure you know, we have seen games like that before in Seattle, but we lost it. So getting to come back and do that again was just such a special thing. And
that's been the strangest part of the season, is to find yourself a game over 500 on July 21st, and the way that they've done it is just so crazy.
No,
you're right. I think it's the Mariners, for better or worse, have been very much a team of the year from the standpoint of, I mean, hey, they hit five home runs on Wednesday and they win a ball game. You know, I mean, it's services
by one run.
Yeah, I mean, like, when they don't hit home runs, they get into trouble. Like, it's, and the funny thing is that this team this year looked like one that much more so than in recent years would be a team that would manufacture runs.
Agreed.
Yeah, on the base paths, for
and
sure.
We've seen it in bits and pieces here and there from different contributors. And I think there is certainly they're capable of that. But there are so many guys on this team that can park one over the fence that I don't think we necessarily anticipated, namely Martin, to probably lead that charge.
And
that, I mean, you look at home run rates now. I mean, we had the second most home runs and the second most strikeouts in the history of baseball before the All-Star break this year.
Yep. Everyone's become Adam Dunn.
It's become this era of instant offense. And I've talked to a number of opposing managers about it. I talked to AJ Hinch about it when the Mariners were in Houston before the All-Star break. They've got George Springer leading off.
Sure.
Springer's got close to 20 bombs. The Mariners were in Boston. Mookie Betts, 15 bombs.
Phenomenal.
Adam Jones. Yeah, he really is. Adam Jones got moved to the leadoff spot with Baltimore. He's got whatever it is, 17, 18, 20 home runs now. Even here in Toronto, Bautista's on the disabled list, but Bautista was leading off before his injury.
Yep.
And there hasn't been many home run hitters in the last 5 years better than Bautista. I mean, you are seeing it affect lineup construction. You're seeing managers go, listen, if I got a guy who in one swing can give us a run or a couple, this idea of instant offense, why would I not give him a fifth at bat.
Yep.
So
makes
let's
a lot
do
of
it.
Sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, sadly it has made this, you know, Manfred has talked about not so much pace of play, but this idea of pace of action.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And right now, Major League Baseball,
it's so spurty.
Oh gosh, man. It's like strikeout, 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 bomb, home run, strikeout, 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 home run. And it's, I mean, well, it was at this point, it was maybe close to a month ago, the Rockies and the Marlins, I want to say, where it was like a 5-3 game and all eight runs were on solo home
solo runs. Shots.
Jeez.
And it was the most runs ever scored strictly on home runs in a game.
I think that's all the home runs, I think, Aaron, are partly a counterbalance to this velocity increase because the strikeouts were
people
unavoidable.
Are turning around pitches.
I mean,
yeah.
Who do we have? Who was it that was in the other day? It was it was Joaquin Benoit, who, you know, hasn't had the best season and has been up and down with injury and effectiveness. But he came in and just casually, this guy's what, 38, 39 years old? Casually threw 96 miles an hour. And it's like, man, when I was back in my day, you know, like you had a guy that threw 94 and it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and
no, I've felt the exact same way with Benoit when I see him go mid 90s on a regular basis on the gun.
But he's not alone. That's everybody.
No, but he's 38. But to your point, he's 38 years old.
Yeah, that's the
when you think he'd be the crafty righty at this point
right.
in his career.
Yeah, you'd expect him to be Joel Peralta, what he was.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just, to me, it's a very interesting time when it comes to offense and baseball. I've really enjoyed tracking it. Like on Baseball Reference on the homepage, if you scroll really far down, you can click on a tab that will show you all of the home runs from the previous night's games.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also click on, like, there's a similar tab that will show you every, basically every pitcher's line, everybody, starters, relievers who pitched in a game, a major league game from the day before. And for a couple of days there before the All-Star break, I remember looking at the home runs, and then you can like export the pitcher's lines to like a CFV file mm-hmm. and then put them in Excel, and you can sort it really easily there. And I remember just like looking at the strikeouts to hits, right? And I remember looking at it for a couple of days in a row, and it's just like, man, every night we were seeing more strikeouts than base hits in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
And part of me is like, God, what's going on with hitters today? And then I'm like, what's going on with Edwin Diaz?
Yeah, that's it. It's the relievers are just unreal.
I mean, good luck against that guy.
21 of his last 24 outs, Aaron. Did you see that? Our strikeouts.
It's nuts.
That's incredible.
I mean, it's and he is making, he's embarrassing guys.
Yep.
Like, legit, like when the Orioles were in town before the break, and he's punching out Adam Jones and Trumbo and, you know, Weeders, right? Veteran all-star players.
No chance.
Yeah. Like, and he's just flipping quarters, oh man.
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And that's what's crazy. He's a two-pitch pitcher, and everybody knows it, and you cannot touch it.
You got no chance.
Well, how do you go from when the velocity is that extreme at 100 miles an hour to, you know, some like spawn of Satan upper 80s slider? Like, well, how do you adjust to that? I just think we're pushing to the limit of what the human brain can process and the body can react to at that
point. And I really think the pitch that has done this is the slider, because it's so similar to a fastball, and it's like the midpoint of a fastball and a curve, and it's just like it kills.
You have no
if you can throw it right.
No chance.
Well, I mean, and you look at, okay, and add to that, I think that's a good point. Add to that the number of, you know, Felix used to be the only guy who was throwing a 90-mile-an-hour changeup.
Right.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's everyone now.
Yeah. Like 5 years ago, for sure. Like that was, he was the only guy. But now, I mean, a lot of these guys are doing it in the National League. I mean, like, I think about, like, Jose Fernandez and that slider curve thing.
Syndergaard throws a 95-mile-an-hour slider.
Yeah. I mean, that is just ridiculous. Strasburg's got a 90-mile-an-hour changeup. Archer doesn't throw it much, but he's got, like, an 88-mile-an-hour changeup.
Yep.
I mean, you're just seeing – now, the difference, of course, is that their changeup many times is actually reflective velocity off of their fastball, whereas Felix's is a freak and obviously hardly separated at all. But nevertheless, I mean, we're seeing – that even in secondary and off-speed pitches. And yeah, you know, one of my, you know, you guys are like me, I'm sure, where for the last whatever has been 3 months, your phone has blown up telling you what Joe DiMaggio has done on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, totally. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, we've never been more happy for the streak to be over.
Uh-huh.
I think DiMaggio's hitting streak is so fascinating for obvious reasons, but it's so fascinating when looking at it through the lens of Major League Baseball in 2016.
Yes.
Because, hey, DiMaggio, obviously iconic. I don't even have to say it. One of the greatest of all time, blah, blah, blah. But did Joe DiMaggio ever have to face a slider at 89 to 91 day game after a night game on a West Coast road swing in Los Angeles? You know what I mean?
Never had to go to the West Coast.
No, he never had to do that. Now, what he's done is incredible and will probably never be done again. But when you combine velocity with specialized bullpen with Edwin Diaz that maybe isn't in every bullpen, but you know, those guys are around, obviously.
Yeah.
God, I just,
it's like a totally different
Jackie
era.
Bradley has a 29 game streak or whatever that was. You're like, that's
amazing.
That's really good. That's really good.
Ichiro had a few, and I think in the low 30s, that was the same kind of thing. Which is like, man, this is incredible. How did he do 20 more games?
It's interesting you bring up Ichiro, because I went back and watched, for whatever reason, highlights of like some 01 to 03 like hitters, and watching the pitchers then.
Oh, so
even
different.
Then,
yep.
It's just a totally different league.
The build of pitchers, their velocity, totally different.
Well, I mean, we haven't mentioned that Chapman hit 105
yeah.
a couple of nights
no big
ago.
Deal. Also,
I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah. You want to talk about stuff that DiMaggio did that'll never get done again. How about 1937 when he hit 46 home runs and struck out 37 times?
Dude, I am in love with Baseball Reference from that era.
The old times.
Amazing. The 30s, early 40s.
It's incredible. Like, it makes no sense.
No.
It makes no sense.
It wasn't the same game.
I've tried talking to Rick and Kevin about this a little bit because they were obviously fans and for some of that.
They were there in the 30s. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I really want to learn more about, I mean, obviously bullpens were the furthest things from specialized. They were the guys who just never pitched. And you're facing a starting pitcher who's running on fumes at pitch count, like 160, right? But like, I'm really curious, like, what was the average fastball velocity?
Love to know.
Of whatever, Musial's time, DiMaggio's time, Aaron's time.
How hard did Bob Feller throw? I would love to
yes,
know.
Yes. Like, I need to know, like, and not only that, like, how hard is the slider then, right? Yep. Or whatever.
Yep.
I mean, it wasn't even a pitch then.
The slider?
Yeah.
I mean, is it somebody throwing, like, some slur? I mean, like, we see curveballs we see curveballs now that are at 83 miles an hour.
Yep.
I mean, we see I think we take for granted, like, God, that thing's got some ridiculous break, and it's at 83 miles an hour.
Lance McCullers. I think he throws it even harder than that.
He throws it at 85.
Yeah.
That's a great example. And he throws it at 85.
Vicious 12-6 break.
It's just, it's a monster.
Yeah.
Right? And so, the game has changed so dramatically, and I find myself talking on both sides of my mouth, because even on the air, I'm like, Todd Frazier, nobody sums up baseball today better than Todd Frazier, batting 211 with 28 home runs. There goes another one.
He made you look good, too. Yeah, he did home runs in 3 days.
Like, and yet, I don't know, man. Like, he's the guy that team want, that a lot of teams want one of right now. You don't want your whole lineup of that. But,
right.
No.
I mean, that's...
It's
a different time. It's just...
And I think about, I mean, speaking of Frazier, I think about Trumbo, like, and what he would do for this team.
In 1941, Joe DiMaggio had 76 walks and 13 strikeouts and 622 plate appearances. So I'm pretty sure Trumbo struck out 14 times last week, probably.
Yeah.
It really, and not to be like the anti-Mariner, and I hope people take this the right way, like, it really makes me appreciate Jose Altuve.
Hell yes, I love.
I mean, I don't know where fans stand on it, where it's like, oh, you can't, like, you like somebody from the other team, you don't like the Mariners. Like, hopefully people realize that, like, you can, you know, respect,
appreciate
the
talent.
Yeah,
yeah.
This is going out on the internet, Aaron, which is notoriously understanding of subtlety and nuance, so you should be fine.
I mean, that guy's absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
I was in the AA Texas League broadcasting for the Rangers affiliate in 2010 and 11, and I believe it was in the second year. It was one of those 2 years. Altuve played for the Astros AA team. So I saw Jose when he was in AA, and I'll be honest, man, it's like, this is really cute. You know? Like,
I still think that.
Like, you've got a 5'5" guy swinging a telephone pole, and he's hitting like 3.25 in the Texas League. Like, this is, guys, it's adorable.
Yeah. One part of the trick.
Yeah. Like, I never in a million years would have thought this guy was going to win the batting title basically every year for the now until he wants to retire.
Yep.
You know? I mean, he's now doing it with power.
Yep.
And he's not striking out.
He's a Hall of Famer, man.
I'm telling you, like, right now in the history of the Mariners, Cal Ripken Jr. has the most hits against the Mariners. Which
would have thought I was surprised. Palmeiro, but yeah, okay.
Palmeiro
feels like Palmeiro.
I think Michael Young was like a handful of hits behind Ripken.
Okay.
And then Palmeiro.
This is the house of horrors you're putting me through right now, Aaron. So
but my bottom line is, man, Altuve is never hurt. The guy's always healthy. He plays every day. And he crushes against the Mariners. Don't take it personally. He crushes against everybody.
Never walks either.
He never. Well,
so he'll actually, get
hits. Yeah, he's walked more this year, but that means he's gotten 40 walks.
Right. All exactly.
Right. And so, I mean, he's going to retire with the most hits ever against the Mariners. He's, in fact, Blow and I had on that night off in July 4th in Houston after Altuve just peppered like whatever two doubles and a single against us. I said to Blow, I'm like, okay, I'm going to say something idiotic and tell me that I'm stupid. I'm like, Jose Altuve is going to be one of the greatest hitters of all time. Of all time. And then he kind of talked me off the ledge because it's like, okay, well, now you're saying that. I mean, like, you automatically have, I mean, you name it. You got easily six guys you fill up the top 10 right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
of all time?
Of all time.
Like, currently playing?
No, no.
Oh,
no,
okay.
Like, I'm saying Altuve will be one of the greatest hitters ever, but right now in that top 10, you already have
six locks. Right,
you got, yeah, you got sure. Cobb, okay. You got Rose, you know what I mean? Like,
Hornsby.
It's all, yeah, Hornsby.
Bonds. I'd put Bonds in there, personally.
Musial. I mean,
I have
it's like,
to put Bonds in a top 10 of hitters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so you see my point.
But
yeah.
But saying he's not in the top 10 doesn't mean he's not one of the greatest hitters of all time.
Right, right. So then the argument went to, okay, so how can you, what's, this is a stupid dinner conversation on July 4th in downtown Houston. Okay, so then
that's
like,
where you well,
yeah, exactly. All right, so then what's all time? Is that top 20? Is that top 50?
Yeah.
Right.
There's a lot of players, yeah.
But I mean, the guy just gets over 200 hits every year, and he squares everything up.
Such a feel for the barrel. Unbelievable.
He barrels everything up. He covers every inch of the plate.
Yep.
He's right-handed Ichiro. I mean,
more pop though.
Yeah.
Or at least that pop shows
more
up
game
more.
Pop. Yeah. Exactly.
More 7 o'clock pop.
Exactly. Yeah. He's a if you're a fan of baseball, I don't know how you can dislike the guy. I hate that he's in our division, which I think is what you're intimating.
Right,
it's hard
sure.
playing him so much, but how can you not? It's the same thing with like Mookie Betts. How can you not love watching Mookie Betts play baseball? I mean,
yeah.
It's a joy.
He's good for the game, man. Like they're incredible talent. And he's playing. He was with the Astros when they were just the worst.
Yep.
He signed the most team friendly deal ever.
Uh-huh.
He seems like he wants to be there forever.
Yeah.
You know,
singing Backstreet
like,
Boys on Twitter.
How great was that?
It was pretty great. You know, Aaron, I don't know how you feel about it. And we'll let you go here real quick, but you see a lot of people talk about how do we make baseball more marketable? Like, how do we grow the game, blah, blah. And, like, there's crazy stuff. Like, something got posted today about cutting the game to 7 innings, which is just nonsense. But, you know, my answer to all that stuff is, like, I don't know. Have you let young people watch the game recently? Because the young talent in this game is so
crazy, amazing
right now. I would assume that you would agree with that. Like, Mookie Betts, Jose Altuve, Jose Fernandez, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout. I mean, the names go
Jackie
on.
Bradley Jr.
Jackie Bradley Jr. Yeah. It just goes
Carlos
on and
Correa.
On. And then, you know, Ketel Marte here and all these other amazing, young, talented players. Like, baseball, if you let people watch these young guys play, should be fine, you know? Like, it's an amazingly talented, talent-rich game at this time in its history.
So, this has been, like, something that I've just been fascinated by, especially since last winter. And this was kind of what spurred it all for me. I was at the Fox MLB Winter Seminar in Los Angeles for 2 days, and it's something that I get to go to every year. And they always have some type of keynote speaker come in and talk to all of us. And last year they had the Kevin Mather of the San Francisco Giants. And he was talking about how when Zach Greinke came in on like a recruiting trip as a free agent to AT&T Park over the winter, Greinke came to the ballpark, Bochy was there, Posey was there, the whole deal. They ran him around, they talked to him, and they were going to take him to dinner. It was still a little bit early in the day, and Greinke said, you know, I come here all the time with the Dodgers, but I don't feel like I've ever really gotten a chance to just kind of explore the city a little bit. So if I've got a couple hours, if you don't mind, I'm just gonna go for a stroll in downtown San Fran, right? I mean, play tourist. Sounds like a good idea. And the Kevin Mather of the Giants sat up in his office at AT&T Park, which looked right out onto the street, which then looked down, you know, blocks and blocks and blocks into downtown San Francisco, just like the jungle of downtown. And Greinke, who at the time, remember, had like a 1.6 ERA or whatever, you know,
right.
At the end of the season. Like, he could have won the Cy Young if it wasn't for Arrieta. He was the elite pitcher pitching in that state down the coast for the Giants rival. And he said that he watched Greinke walk out of AT&T Park and disappear into the weeds of downtown San Francisco, and there wasn't a single person who stopped him.
Yep.
And now, to be fair, to you know, the devil advocate, okay, Granke's like a 180-pound white guy. And
pretty short, too, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and it's like if he doesn't have the long flow, he's pretty unassuming. But the point is, you have one of the elites in the game at the time walking in one of the most massive metropolitan areas in a market that loves baseball in San Francisco, and nobody recognized him. So then that got me thinking, okay, like, what's the Pike Place test? Mm-hmm. Like, you get Carlos Correa, and you start him at the Flying Fish, and you have him walk all the way out to the Hippies. And
so that could be any direction for, like, a half mile. You've got to be more specific.
the hippies selling things that were made in their trunks.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, again,
the bead stuffed lizards.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's not a single person who's stopping Carlos Correa.
No.
I almost think there's... You think anybody stops Mike Trout?
No.
Probably
the neck
not.
The neck doesn't give him away?
The non-neck?
Yeah, the non-neck. Like, to me, the only guy that I felt 100% confident was Jeter.
I think you'd get Harper if he has the hair.
Harper hair. Yeah, that'd probably do it. Good call. My next step to that, and this is very long-winded, I'm sorry.
No, I love it. It's great.
I really thought a lot about it over the winter. Like, to me, baseball has just become regionalized to such an extreme fall. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it just sucks, man. Like, there's nobody there's no kid in a backyard in St. Louis who is pretending to be Robinson Cano.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nobody in the backyard in Seattle pretending to be, I don't know, maybe even Bryce Harper.
Right.
I mean, maybe Harper, since he's got the flow and he's the most outspoken guy in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there's nobody. Okay, even stay in the American League. There's nobody in the Seattle backyard trying to be Manny Machado.
Yeah,
no.
And it's like people, and you know, I get feedback, whether it be through social media or whatever else. But let's face it, it's all through social media. Especially when I'm on TV, like, you're talking about the other team too much. And hey, I'll wear it. Maybe there's times when I am. Like, I certainly am not perfect. I've certainly made a mistake like that from time to time. But I do feel like there's this almost an arrogance to the modern day baseball fan, local baseball fan. And I'm not just saying this about Seattle fans. I think it's true about everybody. Where it's like, well, you know, all I care about is my guys, my 25. And it's like, who's this Machado kid? Whatever, he looks all right. We only see him 8 times a year. You know? Where it's like, dude, when the Niners come to town, you know, or whatever else football team comes to town, you know, those guys are stars, man.
Yeah.
Like, you know all about those guys.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, like, to me, you're right, man. The young talent in the game is maybe better than it has ever been. Ever been.
It's a crazy, crazy crop right now.
For the oldest sport in the country, it's incredible, the young talent. But... like I actually talked to Kevin Martinez about this, who, for those who don't know, is a good follow on Twitter, and Kevin's kind of the director of marketing for the Mariners and just a tremendous guy. I talked to Kevin about it at the start of the season. I'm like, man, I feel like local baseball fans don't care at all about players on the other team, and it's kind of our job as we are the people who let you consume the game, right? We are your gate, whether you like it or not. Like, we are your gateway. And so there's certainly a time, there's certainly a place, and there's certainly a quantity of doing that. Because, like, I cannot forget that, obviously, people who are watching are in the Northwest, they care about the Mariners. And I care about the Mariners. But at the right place, in the right time, and in the right dosage, like, I really feel like I need to do a better job of giving you 30 seconds on why you should maybe not be a fan of Chris Bryant when we play the Cubs on this road trip, but to let you know, like, hey, You're watching this. You're a baseball fan. You need to know something about Chris Bryant and appreciate how good this guy is. So you start, and I think if you start doing that more and more and more, and if it's a total grassroots thing, it's a total pie in the sky thing, and it probably will never happen like this. But if everybody in our position was just a little bit more conscious of that, including myself, I think that helps. That's not there's not just a magic elixir that all of a sudden people know about every young player and they love them all. But in the NBA and the NFL, man, people eat that stuff up. But for some reason in Major League Baseball, it's just all regionalized. It's whatever team is in your backyard. I'm speaking in generalities here. There's people listening right now who are like, Goldsmith, you're an idiot, because I'm not like that. But the people who are saying that are are kind of, I feel like, are few and far.
They're the idiots.
They're the idiots.
Yeah, I agree. No, I agree with so much of what you just said. And it actually, I said I was going to let you go really soon, but I'd be really, really, really kicking myself if I didn't use that to transition to one of baseball's last truly national stars, which was Ken Griffey Jr., who, of all of the places for baseball to produce that kind of player, where you could have
Seattle,
somebody,
Washington.
And it's amazing, you know, Aaron, as doing our thing, you probably have gotten this too. I've found people that are Mariner fans who are from New York, and it's because of Griffey. You know, like that guy, something about him, his video games, his marketing, is probably the closest thing that baseball has had to a Michael Jordan type celebrity in the last 25 years. I know you weren't around when he played with the team back in 09 and 10. Have you had a chance to get to know him at all as he's like checking with the team here and there? He's getting enshrined in the Hall of Fame in 2 days, which is why I thought it would bring it up.
I've heard about that.
Yes.
Junior has come, I would say on average in my 4 years now, Junior has kind of randomly popped up and made a cameo in the booth like at least twice a year. And I see him in spring training every year as well. So I don't feel like I know Junior, but he certainly knows of me, and yeah, I know of him. And so
we're on a first name basis. We're mutual colleagues in the broadcasting business.
So he did. Now this is embarrassing, but it is probably my greatest Junior story. Opening day this year, he's walking out of the booth. I'm walking into the booth, and like I said, we've seen each other. We know he knows who I am. I'm the guy who sits next to Rick. And we open up the door, and we're like we almost run into each other, right? Like that's how it's like a collision in the doorway. And he looks at me, he looks up to my head, and he goes, "Nice hair." It's like,
that felt good, huh?
I'm like, man, Junior, this is nice. Like, you know, Ken, I carry a recorder around with me. It's part of my job. I'm gonna actually just, can we recreate this? I'm rolling in 3, 2, and go.
And I open the door.
Yeah. And so that was that was my Hall of Fame moment with Junior.
I was lucky enough to be at the media thing where they introduced his Hall of Fame, and just a little bit of that, I'm surprised he probably would have totally been down for that idea. That guy is a people pleaser.
Yeah, he's the exact guy that you see. I mean, he's a classic, what you see is what you get. I mean, he's as good of a guy as there is. And obviously, I'm so excited for Rick and Kevin on Sunday to be able to go to Cooperstown. And yeah. Think about this, man. Kevin, who I think so high, for those who don't know, Kevin Krimman, our producer and engineer, I mean, he started with Rick in 1983 on Mariners Radio. And Kevin is like a second father to me. I would do anything for Kevin. I just think the world of him. But for a superstar like Ken, let's put Kevin in where he, and what his job is. He is a producer engineer on radio. Okay. Like there are a lot of people on the totem pole who are higher up than Kevin, right?
Right.
Ken Griffey Jr. not only knows Kevin's family, hugs Kevin, and Kevin is going to Ken Griffey Jr.'s induction into the Hall of Fame. I mean, just think about that for a second. I mean, the guy who rides the levels, gives us the promos to read and sets up the equipment. Now he's been doing it for 3 decades.
Right.
But I mean, think about that for a second. Like that's incredible. And that goes to show you the relationships that Ken created. And to dovetail with that, the Lou Piniella created too. I mean, I see the exact same thing when Lou comes to the booth, when he's at the ballpark. I'll be honest, man, you don't see, this is not a knock on service or a knock on Lloyd or any other man or Wedge. You do not see many managers today in baseball who know the radio producer engineer for their team, like Lou Piniella did with Kevin Krimman, or like Junior does with Casey. You know what I mean?
That's crazy.
It's just, it's pretty, like when I really realized that, I was like, man, this is, tells you a lot about both those guys.
Absolutely.
It's pretty neat.
David, do you have any last things for Aaron before we skedaddle?
Aaron, what's your opinion of In-N-Out Burger?
Oh, this is important. In the fast food hierarchy.
Sure. No, I understand. I enjoy In-N-Out Burger. I do enjoy getting In-N-Out when I go to spring training or when I have college basketball in like Tucson. There's some In-N-Out.
Mm-hmm.
The Shake Shack, I find better than the In-N-Out, and it's not particularly close.
This is an acceptable answer for me as long as we're all willing to agree that In-N-Out is not objectively bad.
No, like In-N-Out is very good.
Thank you. That's fine.
Yeah, like
I'm okay with degrees of disagreement here, but this binary it being bad thing that came up on Twitter today almost drove me to violence.
Yeah. Ugh.
Like the animal fries, although they look grotesque, are delicious.
So good.
They're so
it's like that poutine you got at McDonald's, but done right.
The shakes at In-N-Out I find unedible. First of all, it's not real ice cream. I refuse to have a milkshake that doesn't involve milk or B, ice cream. You know, basically the two ingredients that make up a milkshake. So when you go take your paper cup over
what about
to
the
that,
shake, they shake it.
They do shake it. It's just a shake.
It's a glorified, you know, a Frosty is almost better than an In-N-Out.
Oh,
milkshake.
How dare you!
I got no need for it. Although
we were doing so well.
Although the strawberry chocolate combo shake at In-N-Out, after I just said it's unedible, I'd probably.
I like the Neapolitan. They put the 1/3 chocolate, 1/3 strawberry, 1/3 vanilla mix up.
Yeah, I don't hate vanilla, but it's just a filler in that situation.
It's boring. Vanilla's so boring.
It's a flavor base to build off of.
Yeah, okay. If you could do like
give
if
me
you could
strawberry.
Yeah, strawberry chocolate is all I need in that particular. Mm. But I mean, have you guys had Shake Shack?
No.
Yeah.
I have not.
Why do you say it like that?
Cuz everyone wants to make Shake Shack sound like it's so cool. Like I feel like it's like Zoomies in 2002.
You actually were 7 in 2002. So I'm not going to listen to your commentary.
I was not 7 in 2002.
Shake Shack burgers are freaking good. And
have
their shakes
ever,
are actually shakes.
Have you ever explored the entire menu of In-N-Out? Like, have you had a protein-style burger?
What?
See? See? See?
What is that, like a two patties wrapped in a bigger patty?
It's two patties.
So they throw a haunch of cow at your face.
For all the In-N-Out haters out there, this is what you do at In-N-Out. You go there, you order a double-double, protein-style, grilled chop onion, animal-style pepperoncinis.
Oh my gosh. This is like the worst Starbucks order ever.
And what that's going to get you is a double-double. Protein-style means wrapped in lettuce, so no bun.
I'm not
animal-style.
I'm not for it.
They grill and chop the onions. Pepperoncinis.
Dude, I'm telling, like, hey, let me preface this by saying, over the All-Star break, I probably crushed 2 cases of grapefruit LaCroix sparkling water.
Ooh.
So I'm going to preface it with that. Okay,
that's our sponsor for this week. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm prefacing with that. I will never, ever eat grilled meat wrapped in a lettuce.
What?
Attaboy. I'm fine with that.
It's you can eat more meat this way.
Dude, I can eat plenty of meat on my own, thank you.
I don't need your fancy lettuce.
Yeah. I don't need your bib lettuce wrapped around it, okay? Or your frisée. I mean, I don't need to cheat to eat more beef.
Sorry, it wasn't
I love In-N-Out. I love In-N-Out, but Aaron's kind of convincing me that you're still wrong, David.
I'm not wrong.
Okay, it's fine.
By the way, your protein thing is just a fancy way of saying low carb.
You gotta go paleo.
That's why I get 2 double doubles.
Bro, you gotta go paleo.
I am paleo.
Yeah, you are, bro.
Yeah, can you throw some beef jerky in the middle of those patties while you're at it?
I'll do it.
Aaron, this has been an absolutely unbelievably fun time, and we're very grateful to have you. I have one last question for you because we brought it up a little bit before we went on air. But as you are whiling away the rest of your evening and weekend, not going to Cooperstown, New York, and when you are not calling baseball games or eating, what will you be watching on Netflix?
Oh, good question. I was going to say, man, there's really nothing else to do. I mean, you've named it everything.
That's it.
Well, there's not a new season of...
have you seen House of Cards yet?
No.
God!
I'm sorry. I haven't seen...
Have
in
seen
my defense,
season 2 of
I haven't seen
Chef's
anything
Table.
Since then other than the Mariners, so...
Let me put it this way, man. I was this close tonight to being like, should I just start watching House of Cards all over again? Like, should I just... Like, start the tour up one more time? Skiba, you're in on this, right? You've done House of Cards?
You know, I have to admit to something. No.
Here's what I want you to imagine,
what are
Aaron.
What doing?
Imagine that you've got... how old's your son?
News, 19 months, and baby number 2 on the way, boys.
Dude, congratulations.
Hey, congrats.
Is this breaking?
Thank you. No, I mean, like, I already told, like, ESPN and Fox about it, so, I mean, like...
So it's breaking.
We'll just, yeah. We'll flip the tables on ESPN and just claim sources report.
Yeah, sources report.
That'll show. That's awesome, man. Congratulations.
Well, you're never going to have time to watch House of Cards again.
I was going to say, once that second one comes, and it's the off season, and you're not calling games, and you're at home, and the kiddos are, like, by the time they're, like, 5 and 3, you just try to imagine having time to watch House of Cards, because... Or in,
yeah, I know. I feel bad now.
You should,
Aaron. Yeah. As a foodie as you are, have you watched Chef's Table?
You know, thank you. I have heard of Chef's Table. I have had good endorsements for Chef's Table. I assume that you are another person in line. The short answer is no. I have not seen it.
You absolutely should. In my opinion, the best thing on Netflix.
Well, you also think that pizza comes from delicatessens.
Damn. Well, I mean, if you throw enough Canadian bacon on a Hawaiian, it's from a delicatessen.
Got him.
Okay, so Chef's Table is what... Okay, so I will check out Chef's Table.
What about Stranger Things? Have you heard of this?
I haven't.
I haven't seen it either. It's brand...
People are loving this show, apparently.
Yeah, it's all over. It's like, it is the new hotness, which I don't even think is a term anybody even...
It's the new How to Make a Murder, which I also didn't watch.
But it's a fictional show.
And what's it called again?
Stranger Things.
Okay, noted.
One friend described it as a slightly darker combination of Goonies and E.T. I don't know.
Okay, I'm curious if that's in my wheelhouse exactly, but I'll
I don't know. Well, it's one of the nice thing is it's only like 8 episodes, so you're going to be fine either way.
But you're an office man.
I'm an office, yes, very much an office man. So I will likely be resuming watching some random episode at a time of The Office.
Did you watch Kimmy Schmidt? I did watch that, actually.
I didn't see
it's
that.
Pretty good.
Really?
I think so. So much disdain.
Damn. Yeah.
This dude, let me tell you.
You're like Brett Boone in The Shift right now.
This is just unraveling fast.
We had something once.
Yeah. Like, I think we've learned.
We should have stuck to sports, Aaron.
Yeah, like 2 hours, good. 2 hours and 5 minutes.
Not great.
Yeah. Not.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like kind of wheels kind of start falling off.
I do like The Office a lot. Can we bring it back to that?
Yeah, favorite character, go.
Okay, non-Michael Scott Dwight category, yes. Because those
yes,
don't
yes,
count.
Yes, 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 good call, good call.
I'm going to go with Kevin. Guy just kills me.
I like it. There is no wrong answer.
No, there isn't. Oh, Aaron? Actually, I want to retract. I want to say Andy. Sorry, Andy Bernard.
Wrong answer.
Nope, I love Andy Bernard.
I'm gonna get very specific on you. Old Andy before rehab.
I didn't even make it till he was out of rehab, so
that's the only one that I'm referring to. I am chopping off Phyllis's head with a chainsaw.
That is the greatest line ever.
Let's
go. Mine is
overreaction.
I have. So I'll say mine's Creed.
Oh God, that is such a good choice.
Good pick. Okay, that's a sneaky good pick. My second sneaky good pick is Mindy Kaling. I think Kelly Kapoor is like some of her, like the tapeworm thing.
That wasn't like, a tapeworm.
Yeah, that wasn't a tapeworm. I mean, some of Kelly and like, you know, like there's this one episode where she is trying to get Ryan, who just came back to the office, to go out with, to take her out to dinner. And she's like dressed up, like her hair is done. She's in like this hot pink dress. And she's like, well, you better, Ryan, because I'm pregnant. And it's yours. And then they cut to a talking head of her. In the video, and she just shakes her head back and forth.
Oh, I'm so glad this we could bring it back around to something.
Yeah, no, good times. Let me apologize to all the listeners who are like, that show sucks.
No, don't apologize. They're wrong.
If anyone doesn't like The Office, they can leave.
Yeah, absolutely. We do not want you as a listener. We do not want you on the internet. Do not vote. Don't procreate. Do nothing. Just
wow.
Like the first date that I had with my now wife, we hadn't gone out yet, but like she just like came over to hang out, and we sat down and watched like a season one episode of The Office on DVD that I owned. And I was like, you're gonna love this. You're gonna absolutely love this. And I am like wetting myself laughing. And I have this horrible habit if I'm laughing too hard, which I was, that I get violent and I just like start like, I physically like hit whoever's closest to me. And like, I don't even know this girl hardly. And I'm like, just like pounding my fist on her thigh and just like Charlie horses up the wazoo. And she is like not laughing at all. And now we're married. So, it, you know,
good move.
Pretty well. And she does like, she loves The Office, actually. She just needed to warm up to it a little bit.
Nice.
Or I will attack you with the North. So.
A destination, but I got a feeling I need to be your passenger. Sugar, let me be your passenger. Sugar, said I like the way, said I like the way, yeah. You sail your ship now, let me be your cargo. I won't weigh you down, no honey, I won't.